Hi, my name is Eric Bloom. I'm the Executive Director of the IT Management and Leadership Institute. And welcome to today's topic on the AI User Computing Leadership Dilemma. So, what is this dilemma? The dilemma is, what role should IT play in end user AI development and usage? The issue is that if IT controls everything and wants to, clamp things down and keep everything safe and people not doing what they shouldn't be doing, then it can stifle end user productivity and creativity. And not only that, but sometimes IT has to say, hey, I don't have the resources to help you, but then what can we say? I don't want you to help yourself either. It becomes a very difficult position. So in some cases, though the opposite of that, I should say, is that if IT controls nothing and says, hey, you know what? If we can't help you, go for it, then that can cause major operational, security, maintenance, redundancy, and other issues can arise. And some of those issues, actually, many of those issues, we'll be talking about a little bit later during today's webinar. So the question for IT leader is, what's that happy medium between IT truly wanting to protect the company technologically, which quite frankly is part of our job, while simultaneously maximizing end user creativity and productivity? So this is our dilemma, at least as we begin it. It will be expanded a little bit later. So when we start thinking about this topic, the answer to this question, let's begin with just some common terminology. The reason is some of you may know these terms. It's only a slide or two, but just to get everybody talking on the same page. Here we go. Technical issue between keyboard and seat. Here we go. So anyway, end user development. Historically, this is called shadow IT. The reason I'm using both terms is because it used to be that shadow IT meant exactly this, end user computing. But shadow IT over the years has taken on also a more nefarious usage, which is basically employees using cloud-based resources primarily for their own personal gain unrelated to the company. So I don't mean it certainly that way. I mean it as the sort of in its classic sense and that it's end user development. Definitionally, what I mean here is it's the process of allowing non-professional software developers working outside of IT and other parts of the organization to create, modify, and enhance software for business uses within their department. So AI end user computing tools, what they've done is they've been enhanced by AI technologies. They've been around for, well, as long as I've been in computing, which, well, you can tell has been quite a while. But anyway, but it's AI has made it much easier. The reason is it makes it easier for non-professional developers to develop quality software and other types of analysis. Where it's basically embodied, or one of the core place, which has been for many years, is in what they call low-code, no-code development tools. And I'm not going to mention any particular tools because, as you know, I like to stay technology and and vendor agnostic as to not to look like I'm pushing one tool or another. But anyway, it's what it is it's application software development platforms that use graphical user interfaces rather than handwritten procedural source code to develop applications. Quite frankly, IT people use this stuff also. Maybe not the no code, low code, maybe in some cases, but certainly graphical tools to enhance our own development. What's interesting is this software development process has the dual benefit of faster development, and also you can create software with it, actually without a software development background. So now the most common places where end user tools are being used is in what they call robotic process automation, or RPA. It's funny, I often have to look at that because it confuse I confuse it with API, the beer. But anyway, back to what it should be is RPA. What that is it's used to automate repetitive business tasks and workflows within departments. Also, speech recognition and synthesis, where what you can do is it can transcribe speech to text, or also go the other direction and come up and read text and use and create Can't even talk today, and create speech. For example, I use this one a lot. How I use that is just those products integrated in Word, where you can do, they call it read aloud. I use that for all of my proofreading. Many of you who know me personally, and I see a lot of names here that do, is that I'm moderately dyslexic. For me to be able to proofread something is awful. You give me something with three typos, when I'm done with it, it has four typos. So as a result, the text to speech is of incredible value to me from a business perspective. It has other values too, we'll talk about shortly. But anyway, just the idea of generating human-like speech from text. And it's gotten much better in recent years, quite frankly, because of what? AI, like everything else that's been improved from it. Also, a tool that's used is what they'll call generative pre-trained transformers. You ever wonder what that GPT means in ChatGPT? This is what it stands for. And then it generates text on everything from business requirements to sales proposals. It can be used to develop software code. Software source code, which we'll be seeing in a little bit. And it can be used to provide base research for business questions and challenges. In fact, I've done that as most have using Google or Bing or other tools for years, but it gives it an extra sense and it seems to remove all of the advertisements and things along that line. So I still use, for example, Google and Bing for that, but I find myself also adding to my sort of the arrows in my quiver, so to speak, is ChatGPT type tools. And you know what? It can also be used to write a custom bedtime story for your children. Wouldn't that be nice? But let's begin this now by talking about how it can be used to generate code. For any of you who've taken or tried to learn about our certifications, the ITMLP and ITMLE, what you would know is that all of our alumni have a year's access to our IT Leadership Growth Library. Now, the reason that I'm mentioning that is we wanted to automatically integrate it into ChatGPT using their API. So connect from our API, from their API, that we can ask some questions and bring up a really more dynamic and richer content to the people using our library. But the problem is I know PHP, which our platform is built on, but I don't have a clue how the ChatGPT API does. So guess what I did? I asked the question shown here in red, or the statement, show PHP, write PHP software that connects to the ChatGPT API. And this is what it came up with. It's very impressive, and I will tell you, it works. Certainly I have to take it and customize it into our environment. You'll see in the upper left where it says, your API key here. It even gives you embedded instructions. And in the text that came around it, around this code, actually gave you additional instruction on how to implement it within your system. So huge time saver. Would I eventually figure this out or find it in a online somewhere? Probably would, but I wrote that one sentence and poof, up it came. Remember I mentioned you could use it to write a bedtime story for a child? Guess what? I did one. I wrote write a short bedroom story for a 5-year-old child. And guess what it came up with? It came up with this. But now what I'm going to do is that rather than, I think I'll just won't read the whole thing, but I'll just read you the ending part of it. And so, under the watchful gaze of the moon and the twinkling stars, Lily and her friends drifted off to sleep, ready to greet the dawn with joy and wonder in their hearts. For in the magical forest, every bedtime story was a magical journey waiting to unfold. Now, you might be saying, hey, wait a minute. Eric wasn't reading that. He was drinking his coffee. Now, I'm not a tranquil, a tran, tranquil, I can't even pronounce the word, a ventriloquist. So how did I do that? Well, what I did was I went to a software tool. There were a few of them out there. I read a paragraph or so about myself, and this was all at very, very low cost. And what it did was it created, using AI, the ability to read text in my voice. So how am I going to use it? Well, I just used it here as part of a demo to you. But how I can also use it is that I previously was a nationally syndicated columnist for Gatehouse Media, also wrote for IT World. Well, guess what tool I'm going to use to convert all of those into a podcast, which will be beginning, I would say, within a month or so. You got it. Is that I'm going to have it read the text that I wrote using my voice, recording it to create an MP3 to automatically load it to be able to be used as a podcast in my voice. I mean, think of what a productivity gain that is, from any number of perspectives. I must admit it did wig me out a little bit after I read a paragraph or so, and then it started sounding like me. Now I had my wife and my kids and a few friends listen to it, and they said, "It's not exactly you, but definitely thought it was me, and it was pretty darn close." I have a strong Boston accent, if you've never noticed. Some of it's in there, particularly when I get tired, is that it will come out more, but it was enough to work really, really well. Why am I telling you this? Because these are tools I want you to think about using in your particular shop, or also in ways of helping your business users. This one in particular, maybe not the bedtime story, but helping read your marketing material for your sales or marketing parts of your organization. Some other common uses, and this one's been around for a long time, data analytics and visualization. You know, where it's automatically creating graphs, figuring out, data, looking for trends, things along that line, that can be used to add a business value or business insights to those making decisions within the organization. Also, as mentioned before, I use it for one-on-one brainstorming when I'm coming up with ideas for a new for a new class, maybe a new webinar, for other things that I'm working on. What I'll do is that, and I've done this forever, is I would, in that case, just use Google as a brainstorming partner for me. I'll say, "What do you think of this?" And it'll come up and go, "Ooh," and then I'll type something else in, and I'll use it sort of as a one-on-one partner. I now do that with Microsoft Copilot, which, by the way, is a great integration into the Microsoft Office set. And also I use ChatGPT and other tools of this type, depending on specifically what I'm trying to do. Also, it can create images and video, and generate video. Now, with this, I'm going to say I won't show it, but I was talking to a friend of mine who's starting a new company. And I said to him, just out of chance, I said, "Hey, you know what? I love your logo. Who did it?" And he said, "He did it." And I said, "Wow, I didn't know you had an artistic background." He says he doesn't. He did it using, created his company logo using, just AI-based graphics. So I wanted to have some graphics for this. So guess what? I put in and I said, "Gee, we do training, obviously, no secret there." I said, "I'd like an office with two people taking the form and using the format of the artist Leonardo da Vinci." And this is what it came up with. I could certainly use that within, say, a slide on training material or other things. But what it does is it allows me, or well, you, and I'm where it says it's the openart.ai/create. There are many other tools. There's Midjourney. There's some great tools that do this, but it allows you to really develop your own custom look and your custom graphics for different things you're doing. What I will just say to you on this one, actually, as well as anything out of any of these tools like Copilot or ChatGPT, just be careful of copyrights. So, given all this info that I just mentioned, if you remember, sort of half-toned in this gray here, this is what I said before. You know, if IT controls everything, then it stifles user creativity and productivity. If IT controls nothing, then basically it's like the Wild Wild West. So as a result, what do you do? So I'm going to say now, let's refine what our dilemma or the question that we're asking is. Is that what is the happy medium that IT should do, but by AI type category to protect the company and maximize end user creativity and productivity? What should we do in this case? Oh, wait, a question just came up. Let me look at it quickly. You mentioned ChatGPT and Copilot as two separate tools. Actually, is that I got a great question here. Isn't Copilot a branded version of ChatGPT? And therefore, they are effectively the same. Great question. Now, let me say I am not an AI specialist by nature, but certainly I'm extremely knowledgeable. They do both go against the same engine. However, I use them both, and what I do find is there are some significant differences between them. If you have Copilot, is that I would bring it up in one and bring it up in the other. Also, it depends on the versions you're using. Is that if you're using the free version of ChatGPT, it's an older build. They just don't go looking at everything in the internet. They have all the stuff that they build ahead of time. Whereas Copilot, it's a purchase product. It's a newer build that Microsoft uses, and they also have some additional and multiple other features contained within it. But great question. But yes, they do come from the same underlying data set, versions and such separately. But great question. Thank you, sir. But now from here, then now let's consider. The next things to consider when answering the question that we asked at the bottom of this slide is the business issues confronting AI users. So first of all, and we have to all be really, really careful of this. So from our perspective, is yes, we're users of this also, but think of us now trying to think of issues related to the user base that we're assisting in implementing these technologies. The first one is bias and fairness. AI algorithms can be biased, leading to unfair or discriminatory outcomes. You've probably read a lot on that, so I won't. All I'll really say on it is it's based on data. If your data, if you were like here, it says for hiring, promotion, loans, student acceptance, and so on. If you have had, bias manual practices for the last 20 years, and you're using the outcomes of that data to, in fact, automate the, the selection process or the decision process, it's going to have the same biases that you did because it's based on all of the data that you've used historically. There's also a lack of transparency. What I mean by that is AI algorithms can be complex and difficult to understand, which makes it really hard to understand how it comes up with the decisions it makes. Even they say that I've heard interviews by the people who've developed things like at OpenAI and others, and they say sometimes it doesn't know how it came up with the answers that it did. And in fact, I'm sure we've all heard stories that sometimes if it doesn't have a good answer, it makes one up. Which maybe means it's a little bit more human than we want to admit. But anyway, also, this lack of transparency can lead to, like, well, why did you not give me this loan? And if you look at them and said, I don't know, that's what the AI told me to do, what that can do is it can really bring up sort of that air of dishonesty and intent, is that so you have to be careful of those particular items. Next is an over-reliance on AI. Is that if you're letting AI do all of the critical decision tools for you, make all those decisions for you, it can result in a lack of accountability and responsibility for the decisions made. So let's say, for example, it's at a college or a loan in a at a bank or just any business decision. They go, well, why did you do that? A manager and decision maker? I don't know. That's what came out of the computer with AI. I just figured it was right, and I did what it did. I didn't really give it any thought. So that there's that lack of accountability, which means people will be looking just by their nature. Employees will be looking at it from a less decisive perspective and saying less analytics on it personally. They won't give it, as they say, that sniff test, and they'll just go with it. So also dependency on AI vendors. I mean, there are many vendors that certainly we have heavy dependence from. I don't think anyone is going to jettison all Microsoft products anytime soon, as an example. But the thing is if we get really used to using these tools, is it can really cause us to basically be locked into these tools forever or be really, really hard to get them out. Now, you might say, well, that's fine. We'll use these tools forever. The problem is, and this has happened with every technology since there's been technology. And where AI is right now, there are many, many vendors. There's huge amounts of venture capital going in for specialty products, for competition, for many of the major vendors competing with each other. Many smaller shops are coming out with AI-based models also. Now, the problem with that is that if you get dependent on one of these models and that model goes away, you say, well, how could it go away? Well, as we all know, look at any technology, whether it be datacom, software platforms, computers manufacturers, pick one, is there are many of them, and then it gets sort of whittled down to a few through an industry shakeout. Certainly, I don't know exactly when it's going to happen. I don't know what firms are going to be there and which ones are going to be shaken out. You might say, well, we're just using Microsoft or Google or some other major vendor. And say, well, that we know that they're going to be there. Yes, I'm sure those firms will outlive us all. However, the specific products within those firms, they who knows, Microsoft in 4 years might say, you know what, let's get rid of Copilot and do something else. You know, is that Google, may say the same thing for their platforms or whatnot. We've all seen technologies come and go over the years. And when that shakeout happens, you have to be really, really careful to understand the effect that that could have on not only your internal IT shop, but on the processes and the reliances, and also to the very first bullet point on the top of this, just the loss of critical thinking that's being used by those people potentially as they're relying too heavily on AI. Next is data privacy concerns. Is that there's a story, it's been bandied about a lot, but a company said, well, you know what? We don't, we know that all of the prompts and things that we're put in are then collected by ChatGPT and other free services. We don't want any of our stuff going out there. So, darn it, we're going to create our own AI data model. And they do it for all the right reasons, and it works awesome. The problem is it goes to all the data that's not turned off or that is accidentally turned on or purposely turned on within your enterprise. And someone asked a question. I saw this on, I don't know if it was CIO.com, ZDNet, Computer World, one of those, I forget which one. And what happened was is that someone was trying to figure out how much someone should be paid, that they were going to hire in for a new position. So they said, what is the salary range for someone with this job title? And it came back because the HR department or IT in behalf of the HR department didn't turn off all of the proper files. Said, well, this person should be paid between $70,000 and $90,000. For example, Joe Smith in the accounting department is paid $82,175 since his last raise of 3%. Probably you don't want that happening in your company. So if you're doing internal models, remember to the systems, it's just data. So, it can raise issues regarding misused data, unauthorized data being accidentally added into these models. Also, regulatory and compliance. It is still a little bit, and I used this expression before, a little bit like the Wild Wild West out there related to AI in regard to government regulations, industry requirements, internal compliance rules at firms, et cetera. So, what will happen is it seems this has always been the case for many, many, many years. Where the technology goes faster than the legislation and the compliance rules that go about it. Because, it comes out and poof, it's there. Okay, what are we going to do about it? But what will happen over time is that as these rules come in, how will you know that you're following the regulatory requirements and et cetera related to these? So what we need to be really careful of is we need to ensure that AI tools comply with relevant regulations and standards. And that can be extremely complex or almost impossible to do, particularly if you don't know exactly the way that it is calculating the answers and suggestions and decisions that it's coming up with. Now, all this now sound a little bit scary? More to come. Dark Knight. Lightning. Why? Because they always do that in horror movies. So we thought that'd be a pretty good place to put a slide like this here. But anyway, is the next things you need to consider when answering this question about the dilemma and what should IT do and what should IT not do? First of all, cybersecurity. Now, these are going to be sort of the standard cast of characters of ones you've probably been thinking about for years. But now dig into it a little deeper, not only from an AI perspective, certainly, but with these advanced AI tools. And by the way, is anybody who is interested in, let's say, a business user, head of marketing, head of sales, accounting, finance, operations, engineering, if any of them want to use a cloud-based product for their work and it doesn't require any data contained within the firewall, do you know that all that they'll need in order to be able to implement that within their department? Credit card. That's it. They pay it, they give their team access to it. IT might not even know about it. So think of that now just through, the cloud and, SaaS, software as a service kind of stuff as we go through these, in addition to things that can be downloaded. But from a cybersecurity perspective, downloading apps, open-end software, Open end source code, on-prem applications, physical hardware, any of this stuff. Another question came in. I like some of the presentation points, however, it is focused, on a real problem. Ethics. How do you suggest we deal with ethics in development, security, operations? How about utilization of the technology? Let me say that there's a lot in that great question, I will say. Let me get through. I have a drop of it in here, but then I'm happy to answer that question at the end, just in fairness to those not as interested in the ethical components. But I will answer your question coming up. Great question. Thank you. Data security is, sensitive data such as payroll, like the one I already mentioned, but also marketing plans that may be stored or encrypted or uncrypted technologies that you may just have in Excel spreadsheets. As we know, Excel spreadsheets, while an incredibly powerful tool in many ways when it comes to production software and production data, that has been the bane of IT's existence for many, many years. Then there's been many tools that have tried to automate those processes and bring them in. But some days, nothing like a good old Excel spreadsheet for things, download data, go to use it, don't know how to upload it back up, you keep it for yourself. I can't say I've never done that over the years, even though of all people, I should know better. Data updating, consistency, accuracy. Like let's say, for example, I download data today to do some analytics. And I use that data today and next week and 2 weeks and 3 weeks from now. Well, guess what? My data is now 3 weeks old unless I made the conscious decision to download it again. So all of these are things, sort of related to issues. Like for example, an Excel spreadsheet, what I should do if I'm doing it sort of correctly from an IT perspective is I should have a data page that I can replace on an ongoing basis, maybe automatic SQL queries using a macro within it, ODBC probably to download in that base page so that every time I bring up my spreadsheet, that analysis is there. Those types of things to be done. Next is data loss. Someone downloads some great application, or they put it in a SaaS-based application. They're really using it. That SaaS-based vendor goes out of business. The person using it gets a new job or retires, and nobody can find it. So that there's that idea of data loss. One thing that we're very careful of, or should be within IT, is what? Making sure we're properly backing up our data. Next is compliance issues. Is that solutions may not be following industry-specific regulations or internal compliance, legal, and standing. To the question I came in, I could put ethics in here also, but again, I'll talk a little bit more about that one at the end. Integration issues is that end-user developed software may not integrate seamlessly into existing infrastructure, leading to incompatibilities, but also technology silos. This department, I'm going to pick on Microsoft Access, downloads a Microsoft Access, and creates a Microsoft Access database. And then the data is being entered. It's being used by one or two people in the department. Company gets bigger. Now it's being used by 15 people in the department. But it's not integrated into the core system so that no one else can take advantage of it. No one else can be updated. Maybe it's not even being backed up properly. As it becomes potentially even transactional as time goes forward. And what that causes is a fragmented IT infrastructure. The use of non-standard software solution leads to one-off software that maybe that IT doesn't even know about. Let's go away from the main end user products. You get someone out of college, they're working for you for the summer, they create a great application for you using Python, and no one in IT knows how to use Python because you're still primarily, say, a Java shop. How do you maintain that? How do you read it? Well, one thing you can do now, which makes it a little bit easier, and by the way, know this if you have a lot of legacy code, contained, like just old stuff, even like Power Builder or just software written in applications that aren't, or software languages not really used as much anymore, put it into ChatGPT. Say, hey, ChatGPT, will you please take this Java module and convert it to Python for me? Or, well, in the case of my example, vice versa. It can cause maintenance, control, and governance issues, and also skill set weaknesses if people in IT don't know how to solve these problems. Developed using unsupported software internally, whether those be database schemers, different naming conventions. Someone builds their own database and refers to, last name as last underscore name, but your IT standard is name, name first, name last, using what they call, camel format, the first character of each word capitalized. So then what you do is you start after doing queries that say, where name underscore last equals last name, rather than being able to use the same field name in both tables or databases. Making software difficult or impossible to maintain by other than the author, because they may have never developed true IT documented professional quality code. I mean, sometimes they do, nothing against end users. Some of them are brilliant, but this is the things that you're opening yourself up to. And then the expense of converting end user software into, that people have built into, production quality stuff, because then it gets into maintenance and support. Non-IT department may lack the resources, expertise to provide adequate ongoing support after that intern goes back to college. So guess what? They call IT and say, hey, this is a platform that maybe you know nothing about or a technology you've never used, but we're now using it by six people and we're driving our department decision making on it. You got to figure out how to make it work. So these are issues. Or scalability, I'm going to cut back to Microsoft Access for a minute. Great product. I've used it myself. I used to teach it many years ago when it first came out. But anyway, is that it's good for a few users, but you get too many users on it. It's what they call a disk-based database as opposed to a server-based database. Yes, you put it on a server, but it works on a shared file background. Unlike, say, SQL Server, Oracle, et cetera, that it basically is a different technical process that facilitates scalability. So all of a sudden, your database worked good when there were three people in it, but now there's 30 people from 15 different time zones, and the thing crawls or basically times out and doesn't work at all. So that causes, obviously, performance issues as your user base grows. So anyway, where are we with all that? With all that said, what can we do to deal with these issues while, again, walking that fine line between, between help and hindrance in protecting the organization's data and computer infrastructure? And also, what we don't want to become is the department, the department of no. No, you can't do this. No, you can't do these tools. Well, you're going to help us? No, we don't have the resources. Well, then I want to do it myself. No, we're not going to give you the tool sets, et cetera. So, what things can we do about this? Quite frankly, whether they're AI-related tools or not. The first of which is establish end user and AI guidelines and standards. So effectively, what IT is going to be is the center of excellence that knows how it should be done. And as we go through this, you'll be seeing that we'll be both sharing from a mentoring, from a knowledge, from a teaching perspective, setting up our non-IT users doing shadow IT, using again the description I used at the beginning of today's webinar, so that they can develop more quality stuff. So if we establish our end user and AI guidelines, we define clear guidelines, standards, and policies that the end user development group should be using. This includes for application development, documentation, user interface design, testing, maintainability, how is the data being secured, supported, and ongoing operational needs if required. So then what we would do as IT is select, select and provide access to IT-friendly development tools, ones that we like, that maybe we're using internally, that have great sort of low-code, no-code components to it that we could then let them use. Because then it provides end users with an easy-to-use AI tool of some sort, but it meets the guidelines, policies, and standards that we're using internally, which not only makes it safer from all of those awful things we talked about before, but if it's using our version of documentation, our user interface, our naming standards, et cetera, it's going to be much, much easier for IT to intake this in and maintain it going forward if needed. Also provide ongoing training and resources to the end user community. about AI in general and how to use the tool to provide, the following, IT standards, guidelines, and established policies. So now, implementing end user controls, incorporate security controls into the way that you're doing it. Now, quite frankly and honestly, many of the low code, no code platforms, I was never a fan of them many, many years ago. But I must admit, there's a few of them now that really do a great job. And by me, a great job isn't only creating a pretty interface that you can put data in and out of and maybe create some reports and analytics, but also they will integrate into your internal IT's infrastructure, either by tapping into it directly or providing integrated APIs between the two. Some of these tools have gotten really, really good, can be integrated in prem with cloud-based integration, et cetera. So do your homework before selecting one of these tools. Incorporate authentication, encryption, access controls, monitoring capabilities, all those things that we need to do anyway. In fact, from a cybersecurity perspective, IT has really changed over the past, I'll say, 10 years. And then now it much, even at the develop, developers, when I was a software developer many, many years ago, I didn't really think about computer security. I mean, I knew it was important and I should put a password and stuff on the front, that of the applications and that. But now, how do you develop software that doesn't allow things like SQL insertion into data fields and things along that line, that you, really software is now being developed and is in a way that facilitates data security built into it. In fact, as part of the whole DevOps process, that flows through development into operations directly into production, there's actually now software that will, AI-based software, quite frankly, that will analyze source code to see if it's following conventions and security mandates. But also encourage testing and quality assurance. I would venture to say that 99% of end user software that's out there, the only one who tested it was the program. And programmers don't make good testers. And I say this as a programmer, and you can pick on people like yourself and those you love. The reason is software developers test software to see that it works. Testers test software to find out where it's broken. This mental headset, this mindset between does it work or where does it not work, makes testers better testers than developers. Me included, by the way. I would put myself in that as a, sort of developer by background. Also, document successful end user implementations. Now, what I mean by that is not just they were successful doing it, but those that were successful doing it, working with IT to come out with a product that really helped the end user department, but followed all of the IT rules with IT assistance to make it super successful, maybe even one that started in the department, it went really well, and then when it was passed over, say it was built in SQL Server or initially in Access, even upgraded to SQL Server, and now those screens are being being converted into other Microsoft technologies and such, and how it went really, really well, and use that as a poster child, and a success story how other departments can look at it and go, huh. IT did do a pretty good job. They helped them do it. They let them do the work when it was done. And our interns went home, went back to school in September. They worked with us. I think I'm going to give IT a call and let them be the thought leadership we need to be able to implement this stuff. So you're providing future end users with a roadmap to success. And you're at, and that's acting as an IT marketing tool, also, by the way, to recruit end user developers into IT. Because a lot of these, end user power users are really IT wannabes, and then they'll get to meet IT people. They're already learning the policies and such, so that when you hire them in, they're halfway there. Next is support, provide ongoing support and maintenance and mentoring on how to grow these people, how to have them expand it. Because you know what? A couple of good mentors in IT can support maybe a dozen different end user organizations. Because effectively, what you're really doing by that, by allowing them to do it, is you're expanding the IT footprint without enhancing the direct IT budget. It's the development of maintainable and of usable and maintainable software development. It allows IT, again, I got ahead of myself on the bullet point, to widen the organization's technical footprint, but, and this is a big and important but, in a controlled way. It assures that end users' applications are built following our guidelines, standards, and policies. And it ensures that skills and knowledge of end user developers, it's enhancing them, which again could be used as a recruiting tool for us. It illustrates IT's role, and this is incredibly important. Instead of being the department of no, it's showing IT as a strategic business partner of our different business areas. Because you know what? If we're working with, if we're supporting, if we're mentoring, if we're helping those in other parts of the organization, we're not just developing an application, dropping it on their lap. We're doing that too, of course. But it makes us a true business partner, which all internal business functions, whether it's IT, human resources, finance, or others, it can help give us a seat at the business decision-making and strategy table. So from here, what I'd like to say is that we offer, oh, another tool. I'll open up this slide so you can look at it. I'll talk about it in a moment. Another question came in. Using AI tools for documentation, such as Copilot to summarize chats, understanding documents, and could be used. Absolutely. I tell you, is one thing I loved about Copilot. And by the way, we'll be getting back to the question earlier regarding ethics. And just a couple of these just came in. Is that for me, is that if I get 10, like an email string with 10 or 15 people answering it, I'm toast. I can't follow it from beginning to end. It'll take me forever. So one thing Copilot has, it's an awesome feature, is within Microsoft Outlook, you can press a button and it generates a summary. So I yes, absolutely. Now that stuff, that's really, almost end user just usage. Then, like for that tool, they're just pressing a button that's a convenience for them. Certainly, if that's implemented, I wouldn't consider that end user computing. I would really consider that end user adoption of stuff that's being provided. Let me see, when you're done, can you please provide a few examples of quality end user tools that would be safe for IT to approve? I'll be happy to do that, but let me just do that. But let me wait after the whole thing is over, and then that part of the Q&A will be cut out of the recorded version of this that will be placed on the website. But yes, I'll talk on that a little bit at the end and understand I don't have an exclusive use, but I know of a few tools that I really like. So anyway, back to this one here. I was here and I said we do these on a monthly basis. Our next actually two coming up for those of you looking to move into an IT management role, should you be an individual contributor or a tech lead, or for those of you who are managers and you're trying to convince, grow, coerce, whatever the right word is, to move individual contributors working within your organizations into an IT management role, I would strongly suggest they sign up. Again, these are free. For making the IT management move, it's on the 26th. Also on a Friday, I think it's next Friday. I think it's next Friday if my math is right. And then on August 9th, our typical monthly ones that we do, it's using Kanban to enhance IT efficiency. We'll be tying it in sort of its relationship to Agile, how it's used heavily within many of the tools now, like ServiceNow, within the help desk. It's used for debugging purposes and so on. Also, is we have ongoing research on the ongoing research on the identification and growth of current and future IT leaders. So if you would like to participate in our research, just go to our website. You'll see research in the menu, click on it. Depending on your organizational level, it'll take you between 3 to 5 or 7 minutes to complete the full application, the full survey. Now, we're also the governing body of two certifications in IT management. The first is the IT MLP, or Management Leadership Professional. This is primarily designed for people who are soon to be managers, newer managers, up to about 5 years or so of IT management experience. And it's 3 days. We do it online on a monthly basis. We've been doing this monthly, actually, this and the next one I'll mention, monthly since 2013. Can't believe we've been doing this over 10 years already on a virtual, virtually. But anyway, these are the topics. As you see, what they're designed to do is expand your understanding of the business of IT. You know, is as an individual contributor, you tend to be, a mile deep in your particular vocation, whether it's help desk, cloud ops, whatever it might be. But you don't really know all those things going on across IT. When you move into a management role, certainly you need to be more than an inch deep in your area of expertise that you're managing, but you need to be a mile wide on all of those things going on within IT. This is what this takes. Now, for those of you who say, well, we have a new manager training program in your company, yes, take that too, because this is different. It's designed to complement. Then we have our IT MLE or IT Management and Leadership Executive. This is geared for more seasoned first line IT managers and IT directors and such. You'll see by the level of topics, it's at a higher level, talking about innovation, talking about IT innovation, productivity, thinking strategic thinking, negotiation, et cetera. And then what we're going to be running another session of beginning in October, beginning in February. What am I saying? Beginning in February, on IT management. Oh, actually, I take that back. This is an older slide. Our new one is starting the end of September. I apologize for that. I will fix this for future webinars. But anyway, these are the topics are the same. The dates are incorrect. But what this is, it meets once a month on a Friday afternoon for 2 hours, and we talk about all of these different topics. Unlike the other two, this is not a certification, it is a certificate program. But at the end of it, it's a closed cohort. Once people are in it, it's for all 12 and all 12 sessions, which is nice because people from different industries, different parts of IT, and actually in this last one, different parts of the world are really getting to know each other and to move forward. So from here, as I say, I'm going to say thank you, but I'm not done yet. The reason is that there's a number of questions that have come in to Q&A. I am going to begin to answer any of those that I have not quite answered already.